The basic principles of defamation apply whether you're a school teacher or a school administrator or a school board member or anybody else, or a butcher or a baker or a candlestick maker. And essentially, the plaintiff must establish that the defendant said or communicated something about the plaintiff that was false and defamatory and made with the requisite degree of fault caused damages. And that's true no matter who the plaintiff is or from what world the plaintiff may come. One issue, though, that is important in libel litigation, where we do see some cases that are interesting that arose out of the education context, is the question of whether the plaintiff is a public official or a public figure. Now, some people will be out there and say, oh, well, public figures and public officials, I can say anything I want to about them. And that's not quite true, but it is true that plaintiffs who are either public officials or public figures must carry a higher burden of proof to establish a defamation claim. And those plaintiffs must establish that the false statement was made by the defendant with actual malice, defined as either a knowing falsehood or with reckless disregard of the truth or falsity. And that goes back to a 1964 Supreme Court decision, New York Times versus Sullivan. That's a First Amendment concept. And then, of course, many cases since then. At least one member of the current United States Supreme Court has questioned the wisdom of that rule. And, you know, some people speculate that if the Supreme Court has brought the right case, it might be willing to revisit the actual malice rule, but that ain't going to happen anytime real soon. So that does come up sometimes in cases arising out of the school world. We cited several in the materials. School board members clearly are public officials and would have to meet this actual malice standard. High-level administrators, superintendents, the high-level administration, there's no question those people will be found by courts if they are plaintiffs in libel litigation to be public officials / public figures and therefore must meet that more challenging burden of proof. Some of the more interesting cases are school teachers. A public school teacher is a public employee, of course, but does that mean that he or she is a public official for purposes of libel litigation? And to the extent we can generalize, and again, we've cited some cases in the materials, but to the extent we could generalize, courts will say, well, look, if this person has the kind of job where the public has a real interest in his or her performance greater than the interest that we all have in the performance of any public employee, then yes, that person becomes a public figure for purposes of libel litigation. And I think the best way to illustrate it, there are two old Court of Appeals cases that we cite in the materials that kind of show the dichotomy. One is a case called Poe versus San Antonio Express News, in which the San Antonio Court of Civil Appeals, as it was then called, which tells you this is maybe not just yesterday, but the San Antonio court said that an ordinary high school teacher should not be considered a public figure for purposes of his libel litigation. But on the other hand, the Amarillo Court of Appeals, in a case called Johnson versus Southwest Newspapers, held that a school teacher at Shamrock High School up in the Panhandle, who also happened to be the football coach, should be considered a public figure for purposes of his libel litigation. And the court pointed out the obvious interest of in small town and big town Texas in high school football. Two things: if you are considering representing a plaintiff who wants to bring a libel suit, two things that you really must consider, at least if the communication occurs in the online world, are actually not the First Amendment, but statutes. And that is, those statutes are the Texas Citizens Participation Act, sometimes otherwise known as the anti-slap statute, And then, assuming we are talking about an online communication, Section 230 of the Federal Communications Decency Act, 47 U.S.C. Section 230. Let me spend just a moment talking about the TCPA. If you are considering bringing a suit as plaintiff in Texas that is even possibly based upon what the potential defendant said in some communication, you must give consideration to the TCPA before you just haul off and file this suit. That doesn't mean you're not going to do it, but it does mean you must give consideration to the suit. The TCPA was enacted in 2011, and it cannot be overstated how significant it has become. Now, in the last session of the legislature in 2019, the legislature drilled it back fairly significantly, but for purposes of what we're talking about today, I'm not sure that the 2019 changes are terribly significant. What the legislature mainly was focused on last session was